Welcome, and thank you for standing by. Your lines will be in listen-only mode until today's question and answer session. If you would like to queue up to ask a question and are a member of a media outlet, you may do so by pressing star one. Today's conference is being recorded. If you have any objection, you may disconnect at this time. I would now like to turn the call over to Jenny Lyons. You may begin.
Thank you, Kate, and hello, everyone. My name is Jenny Lyons, and I'm with Public Affairs here at NOAA Fisheries. Thanks so much for joining us on this call today. Unfortunately, we're here to tell you that NOAA is announcing what we call an unusual mortality event. That's a specific designation. This one applies to minke whales along the east coast of the United States, from Maine to South Carolina. And to talk more about this and how our agency and partners are working to investigate the deaths, I have the privilege today of introducing Dr. Terry Rawls. Terry is our Marine Mammal Health and Stranding Program Coordinator at NOAA Fisheries. She's going to provide a brief summary of our news, and then we're going to open for questions. We also have several other experts available to answer questions, including veterinarian Deborah Fauquier, Mendy Guerin and Mike Asaro, who are both experts in our Greater Atlantic region, and Blair Mays from our Southeast region. You can find specific names and spellings and titles of our experts on the media advisory that went out by email, and also it's on NOAA.gov, or you can send me an email, and I'll get that information to you. My email is Jenny, J-E-N-N-I-E, dot Lyons, L-Y-O-N-S, at NOAA, N-O-A-A.gov. Just a reminder, this call is for working media only. If you're not a member of the press, you're absolutely welcome to listen, but please don't ask questions. This time really is reserved for reporters. So with that, I'm going to turn the floor over to Terry Rawls. Terry, please go ahead.
Thank you, and good afternoon, everyone. I'm going to talk a little bit about this minke whale, East Coast minke whale unusual mortality event, and it is based on strandings that have occurred from January 2017 through January 2018 as of today. And those strandings have occurred from Maine to South Carolina. However, our investigation is going to include from Maine until through Florida, because we know the animals do transit that area as part of their normal biology and normal movements. NOAA Fisheries and our stranding network partners have responded to 29 minke whales during this time period. That includes 10 live stranded minke whales and 19 dead stranded minke whales. Of those 10 live stranded minke whales, one animal was pushed off and released and was tagged by our partners at the International Fund for Animal Welfare, and that allowed us to track the animal for a significant period of time and through a migration up and down the coast of the Atlantic, further emphasizing that we need to keep this UME investigation for the entire Atlantic, U.S. Atlantic coast. The abundance estimates for the stock range from about 2,500 animals to a minimum of 1,400 animals, and that's based on a 2011 shipboard and aerial survey. Looking at the results that we have of the 29 animals that have been reported to us thus far, 18 had partial or complete necropsies. 6 only had documentation, that's photos and measurements, and 5 were not recovered or examined. Of the 24 animals examined or documented, 11 had suspect or confirmed evidence of human interaction, and that was 9 fishery interactions and 2 with blunt force trauma. 8 had suspect or confirmed infectious disease, and 5 are still pending. Looking at those of you who have been keeping track of what's going on along the Atlantic know that we have previously announced an unusual mortality event for humpback whales as well as North Atlantic right whales. So based on that, we know that the stranding network along the entire Atlantic coast are having to deal with 3 unusual mortality events of large whales. And that's a fairly robust task for them to do. So what we are doing on our side is trying to integrate the response as much as possible so the network has clear guidance on what they should be collecting for each of these species and investigation, and going forward to support them as much as we can by assisting with moving assets into the area, whether that's personnel, vessels, or aerial support, and increasing the partnerships that we can to support the local stranding networks. In addition, I just really want to praise the stranding networks along the entire Atlantic coast for the amount of work that they're doing in addition to their normal day-to-day work, investigating three UMEs for large whales and then their day-to-day work for pinnipeds and cetaceans along the coast. And finally, I want to highlight what we hope that you can assist us in getting the information out of increased reporting and what can people do. If you come across strandings on the beach from Maine to Virginia, you can call a hotline. It's 866-755-NOAA, N-O-A-A, or from North Carolina to Florida, it's 877-433-8299. And this is going to be on our website that you can direct people to. For mariners, they can call notify the Coast Guard if they find animals floating at sea, animals in distress at sea, and we really encourage rapid reporting so that we can investigate the cause of the mortality and retrieve the carcass if possible. Or if it's a live whale, we can render aid, as in live whale, large whale entanglement response. And I think, in addition, if people want to provide financial support for the stranding network and for this effort, you can identify your local stranding network and guide readers to donate to the local stranding network or to the national program on the NOAA website is a way to donate to the National Unusual Mortality Event Program. And I think that's it for right now. If we want to take questions, Jenny.
Thank you so much, Terry. At this time, we are going to open for reporter questions. Kate, could you please explain the process for asking a question?
Yes, if you would like to queue up to ask a question, you may do so by pressing star and then one. You'll be prompted to record your name, which is used to introduce your question. Again, that is star and then one if you would like to ask a question. One moment while we wait for our first question.
And it looks like our first question is from WPRI 12 in Providence. Kimberly, your line's open.
Hi there. I know that there are now three different unusual mortality events going on at the same time. Is this something that's unprecedented, or have you seen this type of event happen before?
So we haven't had three large whale, independent large whale, unusual mortality events coincident along the same geographic area and over the same time period before. However, we have had unusual mortality events that overlapped that had distinct causes or specific species. We will continue to investigate all three of these, and the investigation analytical analysis part of it will be separate at some point in the future. If there's a common cause or contributing causes that overlap, then we will merge those. From a response perspective, from the boots on the ground stranding network, they are investigating whatever shows up on their beach to the best ability that they can to contribute to each of those investigations.
Thank you, Terry. Our next question comes from Patrick Whittle at the Associated Press. Patrick, please go ahead.
Yes, hi, thank you. I guess I would just like to get sort of a status update on the other investigations regarding when exactly they started and how close they are to completion.
So I'll turn this over to Dr. Deb Fauquier, who's their unusual mortality event coordinator.
So this is Deb. So for the North Atlantic right whale unusual mortality event, it is still open and under investigation. We've had 18 whales total for that event. 12 in Canada and 6 in the U.S., and we just had a whale strand in Virginia Beach, or in off of Virginia this week, that we necropsied on the 28th. For the humpback whale unusual mortality event, that also is still open and an active investigation, and we are at 62 whales over the time course of that event. It started in January of 2016, so it covers currently now 3 years, including January. We have had 3 whales strand in January, with the most recent humpback whale stranding in Florida on January 27th. So, and those investigations, so both the response side and the investigation side of those UMEs are still ongoing.
Our next question comes from David Abel at the Boston Globe. David, please go ahead.
Thank you. Just had a few questions. The first is, I couldn't quite make out the numbers when she said the abundance estimates for the minke whales. If you could repeat that. If you could also tell us where those strandings and deaths occurred, if you have a breakdown for that. I'm particularly interested in whether they occurred in New England waters. I'm wondering if you can just tell us a little bit more about what you've learned from the UMEs so far, as opposed to just giving us a status update. If there's, you know, what fruitful information has come from these declarations, and what the consequences are of declaring a UME for the minke whales over such a broad area.
Okay, so I'll start with your first point, and the stock range is a minimum of about 1,400 individuals along the coast, up to about 2,600. And that is based on a 2011 shipboard aerial survey effort along the Atlantic coast of the U.S. The second question has to do with where the minke whale strandings occurred. So primarily the strandings that we're talking about included now were in the New England area from Maine through New York, with New York having the highest increase over historic averages of any of the coastal states. The most southern stranding currently reported in this time period was in South Carolina, so principally New England in this area. Deb, if you want to fill in what we've found for
the other UMEs.
And also, just to let you know, both that all the information on the where the strandings are occurring in their states is on the website. There's a table. And also in the FAQs, there are the information about the abundances of the animals. So this information is all also on the website for your use. For the what we've learned so far in the investigations, as we said, they're still ongoing, so we haven't completed them. I'll start with the humpbacks. For the humpbacks, we've had the 62 animals over the 2 years. We've only been able to examine and necropsy about, or necropsy 30 of those, and we still have pending results from about 14. So we really only have results from about half of those we've examined. Of those, we've had 13 suspect or confirmed blunt force trauma, and then 2 suspect or confirmed entanglements, and 1 infectious disease. And then for the right whales, we, between Canada and the U.S., of the 18 whales, we've been able to examine 12 carcasses, and from those 12 animals, we've had 5 suspect or confirmed blunt force trauma and 5 suspect or confirmed entanglements and 2 undetermined causes of death. And I will let Mike Asaro possibly address your last question, which I think was about what we're doing. But can you rephrase what that last part of your question was?
I think the mic is off, but Mike Asaro, did you want to elaborate on any of that or chime in? If not, we can, David, if you want to queue up, we can pull you back in to open your mic.
David's line is now open.
David, you're open.
Hi, this is me, David Abel. You can hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, my question basically was, you basically provide us a list. I'm just wondering what out of these UMEs you've learned. I mean, is there any kind of Have we learned about anything useful in terms of trying to reduce these deaths? And another question I had was, could you give us some sort of range, these 29 deaths from minke whales, or 29 strandings and deaths? How does that compare to previous years?
So I'll answer the second question first. This is Deborah again. The normal average whales per year is 12. So 28 per year, which was the 2017, is above average for minkes. And then, Mike, did you want to address any of the mitigation measures for the right whales?
Sure. Hi, this is Mike Asaro. For mitigation measures for all large whales on the fishery side, we have a set of regulations that have been in place since 1997, known as the Atlantic Large Whale Take Reduction Plan. And the plan contains a number of measures ranging from closures to gear modifications meant to coincide in areas of high use between all large whales, right whales, humpback whales, fin whales, and also minkes, and in areas of high use fisheries. So in terms of how do we learn from things that we are analyzed during a necropsy, for example, we require under the large whale plan a series of colored marks based on gear type and geographic location fished that should be attached to things like vertical lines and other entangling rope. So when and if we do recover some line during a necropsy after a mortality event, we can trace back to where and how that gear was set, and we can take information like that back to our advisory group, the Atlantic Large Whale Take Reduction Team, to consider adjustments or additional mitigation measures in the future.
Thank you, Mike. And David, just to also, the website that Deb mentioned that talks about where the animals were found, I can get that website to you or any of the other reporters on the phone after the call. Just shoot me an email and I'll get you that information again. I will say my email again at the end of the call. Our next question comes from the CBC. Bobby Jean, we're opening your mic right now. You're ready to go.
Hi there. Just before I forget, I am also recording this call and just want to make sure that I can use any of the audio for radio purposes.
Yes.
Everybody's okay with that? Okay. So from the website, it indicates that the status of the species is still stable. Is that still considered the case in light of these deaths and strandings?
Mike, can I turf that to you?
We have a measure we use under the Marine Mammal Protection Act. It's known as the potential biological removal level. It's basically a calculated value based on population size and a number of other factors that gives us an idea of the number of marine mammals, in this case whales, that can be removed from a population incidentally during commercial fishing operations without jeopardizing the population sustainability. So minke whales, in this case, the mortality estimates are not over the potential biological removal level based on our last most recent stock assessment report.
Thank you. Our next question comes from Marianne Bragg at the Cape Cod Times. Please go ahead.
Hi there. Thank you. Let's see. On the UME, I wondered if you have an actual financial number in terms of how much money gets spent over and above what's normally spent on the investigations, the extra resources. And then the other thing is, do you have an estimate, just a rough range, of how much a stranding response costs?
Just recognize that stranding response is principally through network members, most of whom are non-governmental organizations, some states, academics, and they pay for the day-to-day operations of their stranding program. So that is not necessarily a number that we could provide to you, because we don't know financially what each group
does. And we also, as part of the unusual mortality event program, there are some financial assets or in-kind assets that are made available to the stranding network that could come to play. But we do not have those numbers at this point of what that would be. And often for stranding response, particularly for large whale species, there's a lot of shared costs between network members, shared costs between the government and the network members, and so that would be a difficult number to pull together at this point. We do, as part of unusual mortality investigations, try to look at analytical costs and those kinds of things that we can predict up front, and that is currently in process with these three investigations. So we do not have a current total of any of that.
Our next question comes from Heather Goldstone at WCAI, the Cape and Island NPR station.
Hi, I kind of have two questions. With all three of these UMEs, the majority of deaths suspected or confirmed are due to human interactions, either ship strikes or entanglements. You know, the proportion of those two varies for the three different species, but these are not new threats in the past 1, 2, 3 years. So I'm curious what has changed with all of these whales that suddenly we're seeing many more impacts from human interaction. And also, kind of related to that, what qualifies these UMEs as independent or something that would be merged? At what point would the evidence indicate that they should be merged into a single UME?
Oh, sorry. The question was, what has changed with the whales that we have the increased human interaction?
So that's difficult to say this early in these investigations, but often when you have human interactions as a contributing or causal factor for mortalities or serious injury, it takes the whales being in the right place or wrong place with the human interaction. So as we're going through periods of environmental change, and that can be interannual or over time, there can be changes in where animals are relative to where effort, whether it's shipping effort or fishing effort, can change. So those are some of the things that we're trying to get a handle on as we go through these investigations. And that requires looking at a lot more factors than just the bodies themselves or the necropsies or the animals themselves. It's looking at where they are over time, what the drivers might be ecologically and environmentally for them to be there, and then doing whatever management and mitigation measures we have to do with the information that we obtain from that. And so if you want to, Mike, do you want to add anything to that?
I'll just add that, as I've mentioned before, our stakeholder advisory body that we convene under the Marine Mammal Protection Act for these species, the Atlantic Large Whale Take Reduction Team, you know, we plan on convening that group this year, and with a two-pronged approach. You know, the first part is to learn what we can from the UME investigation to bring back to the team as much information we can about how, when, and why entanglements happen in this case. But at the same time, we're also moving forward with two efforts under the Take Reduction Team to look at the feasibility of some mitigation measures in the future should they be needed. And those include things like reduced breaking strength vertical lines, lessen the severity of entanglements when they occur, theoretically allowing large whales to break free once becoming entangled, and also examining some current research and ideas we've been seeing about ropeless fishing, a more technologically advanced solution to eliminate vertical lines altogether to fish ropelessly and eliminating entanglement risks. So those are just some of the ideas on the mitigation measure side of things that our take reduction team is considering as this year goes by. So while we're learning more about the nature of the interactions and what new information, or as you said, what may have changed to result in an increase of the interactions, we are at the same time doing a pretty focused investigation on what some of the mitigation measures we have available to us right now.
Thank you, Mike. I just wanted to also add one thing. As we get information of where in the United States where aggregates of whales are, we do have measures that we can do, both management measures but also notification measures to notify mariners of animals in a certain area, or to do things like dynamic management for ships, voluntary ship speed and things like that. Again, as we understand where animals are through surveys or reports from mariners, it helps us to try to do as much prevention as we can.
And this is Deborah. I just wanted to answer your last question, which was about when will the investigations merge or will they merge. So we had consulted, we have a 12-expert team, which is the Working Group on Marine Mammal Unusual Mortality Events, and they're the ones that look at the data and give us advice whether they think the data meets one of our criteria for when an unusual mortality event should be investigated. And they recommended at this time that they stay separate, but we are collaborating between all three unusual mortality event teams. And at the point where we feel we have a common cause or where some of the investigations seem to be overlapping, then we would combine them. So we have monthly calls for all of these investigations. We have members of the working group that sit on all of these, and we have actually members that are on all three of these investigations within NOAA. So we have a high degree of collaboration and coordination, and when we can combine them, we will do that if it is appropriate.
We have just a few questions in line lined up here. So, operator, I'm going to ask you to remind folks how to get in line to ask questions as we queue up Bill Trotter from the Bangor Daily News, who will have our next question.
As a reminder, if you would like to queue up for a question, please press star and then one at this time. As mentioned, the next question is from Bill Trotter. Your line is now open.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
You can hear me. Okay, great. I just wanted to clarify some of the numbers at the beginning of the call. You said that 18 minkies have been partially or fully necropsied. That's the number I wrote down. How many were not recovered, and how many were just photographed without being examined?
So 18 partial or complete necropsy, 6 only documented, so photographs and measurements.
And human interaction exams, so it's more.
Yeah, and 5 were not recovered or examined. And this
okay.
Is very-
All right, and I also want some clarification on some of the signs that were found on the ones that were examined.
I think you got muted there at the end of that question. I'm sorry. If you get in line, we'll pull you up next after this. Bill, you're open again. Please go ahead.
I am. Okay. Thank you. I just wanted clarification on some of the signs of possible causes. I think you had said there are 9 with fisheries interactions, 2 with blunt force trauma, and 8 that showed signs of infectious disease. Are those all separate animals, or are there any that have more than one of those indicators?
So there are 11 animals that had suspect or confirmed human interactions. Of those 11, 9 had evidence of fishery interaction, and 2 had evidence of blunt force trauma. 8 had suspect or confirmed infectious disease.
And they were, this is Deb, sorry, they were all separate. They did not, so animals with infectious disease did not have fishery interactions, so they were all separate animals.
Our next question comes from Tom Bateman at the Times and Transcripts.
Oh, hi there. Thanks for your time. I'm just wondering about the interaction on the most recent UME with Canadian officials. I know DFO has been, you know, involved with the North Atlantic right whale investigation, and and conservation efforts. Can you just describe what Canadian officials are doing with the minke whale as well, and whether there can be more done on the north side of the border? Thanks.
So this is Deborah. I'll start. So we are working with the Canadian officials, both Department of Fisheries Oceans Canada and also our Stranding Network partners up in Canada on the right whale UME. And so in our conversations with that, we did discuss the minke whale UME. They had not seen any elevation in strandings of minke whales in their waters. So at this time, this UME only covers minke whales in U.S. waters. But as I said, we are in contact with them on a monthly, if not weekly, basis for the right whale investigation. And so if things change, we can always consider adding Canadian minke whales to this investigation, just like we did for the North Atlantic right whales.
Patrick Whittle at the Associated Press, your line is getting opened right now for the next question.
Something as well. So I believe I caught that there were 10 live stranded minke whales and that one of them was able to be returned, and I just want to clarify that the other 9 died. And also, I believe you mentioned that there was a chart or a map where we could see all of the different locations, and I'm just wondering how to access that.
This is Terry. I'll address the first one. So of the 10 live animals, one was released with a tag, 3 were euthanized, and 6 died on their own.
Our next question comes from Bobby.
Location of the website.
If you can email me at Jenny, J-E-N-N-I-E dot Lyons, L-Y-O-N-S, at NOAA, N-O-A-A dot gov, I'll go ahead and get that website over to you. Our next question comes from Bobby Jean at the CBC. Bobby, please go ahead.
Hi there. Tom basically addressed the main question I had in terms of what you're calling on, either what Canada's role is or what you're calling on Canada to do. But I'd like to go back to my question about the status of the species. I'm not sure I have a clear understanding of what the answer was. So is it still considered stable? And if not, what is it considered at this point? Thank you.
So this is Terry, and for the minke whales, just recognize up front, they're not endangered and they're not threatened, so they're not listed under the Endangered Species Act, but they're still protected under the Marine Mammal Protection Act and therefore fall under our UME investigation efforts. So based on what Mike had said, without doing another survey, which will be done at some point in the future to determine that the population is how the population has changed, the number of mortalities that we've observed thus far are not considered a threat to the population sustainability. Is that correct, Mike?
Yes, that's correct. And I will just add as I said earlier, because minke whales are protected under the Marine Mammal Protection Act, and we know that fisheries interactions can and do occur, they fall under the purview of the Atlantic Large Whale Take Reduction Team and the regulations that we implement under the Marine Mammal Protection Act to protect large whales and prevent fishery interactions for 4 of our large whale species in the region, right whales, humpback whales, fin whales, and minke whales.
Our next question comes from Maddie Loria at the News Journal.
Yes, hi. I actually have 2 questions. First, I'm curious if the minkes that were found were all in the same age range or if they differed. And then I was wondering, of those that were found to have infectious diseases, was it something unusual or a normal disease? And then that would go also for the humpbacks and the right whales that were found to be diseased.
This is Terry. And of the minke whales, we had 18% of the animals based on length were adult, and 46% were subadult, with 7% being calves. And then the rest are unknown because we did not get accurate measurements, or they were not fully intact when examined.
And then the next question.
The next question was infectious disease. So we're still pursuing. So they showed evidence histologically or grossly of infectious disease. So we're still going through the analysis to determine what might be the cause. And as we pull that information together across all of the taxa, all minke, right whale, and humpbacks, but particularly for minkes, then we'll have a better idea of what the, if there is a common causal or contributing agent that could be driving those infections.
Operator, could you remind folks how to ask a question, please?
Of course. If you would like to ask a question, please press star and then one on your phone at this time. Again, that is star and then one. And our next question is from Heather Goldstone with WCIA. Your line is open.
I want to follow up on my initial question about what has changed, and you mentioned changing environmental conditions, and I just want to be clear. Are you talking about climate change when you talk about environmental change affecting where these animals are found and how much interaction they have with human activities?
So I'm not a climate – I don't think anybody on the call here are climate change experts for NOAA. There are people who are that. I think this is Terry. I think for all of us, we are continually monitoring sea surface temperature and temperature in the water, where prey are, and where these whales are going. For many of these species, we don't truly understand what their drivers are and what leads them into geographic areas. So every time we do these types of investigations, we're looking at historically what the environmental conditions were and where the animals were relative to the mortalities, and we're looking at that compared to what we're finding during this event and other events. So that is an ongoing investigation that looks at both the biology and the physical, chemical, and biological environment that they respond to and live in.
Our next question comes from Margo Sullivan at The Patch. Margo, you are having your line opened right now. It'll be just any second. There you go. Margo, we can hear you if you're on, unless you are muted on your end. Okay, well, if anyone would like to ask any other questions, Margo was the last one in line right now, so if you press star one to ask anything else. Otherwise, we will, in the meantime, just remind folks how they can help. Terry, could you do that again, please, for us?
Yes, we want to, well, I want to end this with a big thank you to our stranding network who are doing the groundwork to do all of these investigations, and particularly this one that we're talking about. And then, again, the two ways that your readers and you can assist in these investigations is increased reporting and in a timely manner such that our stranding network and NOAA can respond as rapidly as possible. And then the second way is through donations financial donations or in-kind donations to the local stranding networks in the states in which your readers or yourselves live. And also, if you want to contribute to the Unusual Mortality Event National Program that provides funding to assist the stranding network in these investigations, then you can do that through the NOAA website under pay.gov.
Thank you so much, Terry, and everyone on the phone. Thank you for joining us. And if you have any other questions or you want some photos of these strandings or a live minke, please feel free to contact me. If you want the website or the Stranding Network reporting information or other links for how you can help, as Terry just outlined, You can also get that information from me. Again, my name is Jenny Lyons, and my number, my phone number is 301-427-8013. My email address is Jenny, J-E-N-N-I-E, dot Lyons, L-Y-O-N-S, at NOAA, N-O-A-A, dot gov. Thank you all for joining us today.
Thank you. This concludes today's conference. Thank you for your attendance. You may disconnect at this time.